All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
I want to welcome you to our program today. We've got an exciting lineup. We're going to talk a little bit about an organization called the NVBDC. We've got a representative from them that we're going to be talking to, and then we're going to be replaying some of our old There I Was stories that we recorded last year before the pandemic hit. So we're going to play a couple of them that we didn't get on the air last year about going through basic training. And so I'm excited to let you hear those stories, and they will be coming up in just a little bit. So we want to welcome you, as I said, to the program. We want to make sure that we thank all of our sponsors, starting off with our Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans specializes in veterans' disability claims. And for more information, you can go to their website. That's legalhelpforveterans.com. We also want to thank the National Veterans Business Development Council, or the NVBDC. And this is the organization I was talking about that we're going to have a representative from on shortly. Their main purpose is to certify that a veteran-owned business is just that, that it is veteran-owned. A very important part of the veteran-owned business world is that you get this certification, and it kind of gives you a leg up when you're working with the federal government or with corporations that are interested in working with veteran-owned businesses. So for more information about them, you can go to their website. That's nvbdc.org. We've also got another organization that is sponsoring Veterans Radio, and that is the VBOC program, or VetBiz in Michigan. And the VBOC program is the Veteran Business Outreach Center. And in Michigan, it's up in the Flint area, and it is called VetBiz Central. And this is an organization that sponsors veterans businesses in Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana. Veterans helping veterans get their businesses off the ground, get them funding, get them business plans, getting them to be able to come up with a business plan to raise funding, as I mentioned, through the Small Business Administration, putting on all sorts of surveys about human resources and everything else that you need to know to run a business. So we encourage you to go to their website as well. And I think our VetBiz Central, VetBizCentral.com, and for more information about them. The Eisenhower Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan is also supporting Veterans Radio, and so we encourage you to check out what they've got. Eisenhower Center After the Impact program provides rehab for veterans, first responders, and professional athletes through a 30 to 90-day evidence-based treatment program. Participants recovering from concussion, traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, anxiety, depression, and suspected CTEs are immersed in an intensive transitional program to treat these deficit areas. You can contact them for more information at EisenhowerCenter.com. Eisenhower Center has facilities in Michigan and in Florida. So do that when you can. We also need to thank our local veteran service organizations for their continued sponsorship of Veterans Radio as well, and that is American Legion Post 46, VFW Post 423, and the Charles S. Kettles VVA Post number 310, all of Ann Arbor, Michigan. All right, so we're going to get right into the program now, and that's where we've got an interview set up for you by my partner, Jim Falsone. Jim's going to be interviewing Lieutenant Colonel retired Catherine Poynton, who is the new director of the MV Task Force, and this is a military veteran organizational task force, and talk about pursuing and achieving tactical and strategic objectives by partnering with organizations to help veteran-owned businesses. This interview spotlights the value of third-party certification, and, of course, that's NVBDC's efforts. Colonel Poynton will be talking about how she enlisted from Buffalo, New York, enlisted in the Army, went to OCS, got commissioned, and served over 32 years in the military. She'll be talking just a second now with Jim Falsone of Veteran Business Support and Military Experiences. So we're going to take a real quick break, and when we do, we'll come back with that interview with Jim Falsone. And following the interview, we're going to go straight into our There I Was stories of basic training. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We will be right back.
Are you a veteran or a military spouse interested in starting or growing an existing business? Then you want to connect with VetBiz Central, Michigan's only veteran business resource center, providing free one-on-one business counseling services, including research plans and preparing veterans to be lender ready. If you're in business, VetBiz Central offers comprehensive strategic marketing strategies to help you connect to corporations. They are one of 20 centers nationwide devoted to veteran business development through the U.S. Small Business Administration Office of Veteran Business Development. Vets helping vets. Visit their website at VetBizCentral.org. Or call 810-767-VETS.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans' Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today our spotlight on National Veteran Business Development Council's activities. Veterans Radio America has a partnership with NVBDC.org. NVBDC is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses of all sizes in the corporate marketplace. And we're excited to have with us today Lieutenant Colonel Retired Catherine Poynton of the NVBDC. Catherine, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor to be here. I appreciate this time.
Well, we have you on because this is, you know, sort of news, breaking news, if you will, for NVBDC. You are the new Director of Military and Veteran Organization Task Force, which NVBDC has stood up. Can you tell us what that task force is set up to do?
Absolutely. So this task force, like you said, it is new and it's newly created in the NVBDC, and the Military Veteran Organization Task Force is basically designed to reach out to military and veteran service organizations across the country and to join forces with them, to partner with them, if you will, to bring a spotlight on our service disabled and our veteran business owners, and to provide them with the information and education that they need as far as certification goes, as they go forward and work on their contracts or try to get into the supply chains with our nation's corporations.
Well, it's a great idea, which is this Military and Veteran Organization Task Force for NVBDC, which certifies veteran-owned businesses for corporate America. But this is more designed, isn't it, to support veteran business success?
That's correct. It's definitely designed to support business and the veteran-owned, the members and their success. And what this is going to do is it's going to spotlight those service-disabled and those veteran-owned businesses, and again, try to reach out to them. And through our partnerships with various organizations, talk with their members and get them educated on the importance of certification and for them to understand the need for certification, especially for those that are interested in doing business with corporate America.
A lot of veteran service organizations or organizations helping military members transition out of the service talk about economic development. But talk to us about how you see this task force aiding those working in the economic development area for veteran or military-owned businesses.
Well, how I see this helping them is that with corporate America, basically one of the things that they do require is a certification. And through certification, it gives you that advantage of having them certify you as a true veteran-owned business. There are funds available for those corporations that do bring on the supply diversity, whether it's a woman-owned business or a veteran-owned business. And at the same time, it gives them that little bit of an edge, and it gives them that ability to actually be true and certified and validated, if you will, as a veteran-owned business or a service-disabled-owned business. And that is something that kind of gives them an edge, and it just helps them along when they are going for contract awards and things like that, that they are validated.
And one of the things I know from talking to business owners who are NVBDC certified is that the organization really helps on the networking side of things. And it sounds to me that the Military and Veteran Organization Task Force will also be helping veteran-owned businesses network for their greater good.
Absolutely. One of the things that we do is once they're certified, they are put into our database. And through that database, our sponsors or our corporate partners, if you will, have the opportunity to, research and search for those businesses that do have the needs that they are looking for. And, and then this way they can compete for those contracts. So it is a way for them to actually pipeline, if you will, into the different types of needs that they're going to be looking for and to be able to find those companies that can service those needs.
Could you talk about, Colonel, the types of VSOs or military support organizations that you hope to partner with the task force?
Well, actually, we would love to partner with any military or veteran service organization, because even if that organization is not geared toward an employment type theme, if you will, they're still going to have members, and members may be entrepreneurs or they may be a business owner. So you never know what their membership is going to consist of. Like right now, we did a preliminary launch of the task force on a smaller scale, and we are looking to hopefully in the next week or two do a national launch. But on our preliminary launch, if you will, we hit some national organizations like the American Legion, the Paralyzed Veterans of America. We've hit the Women Veterans Alliance, and we've hit the Rosie Network and the Veteran Business Network and a few of those Blue Star families. And so we are just looking to partner with any organization that does, have veterans and different members, if you will, because, like, again, you never know what members of theirs might be business owners and that may not know about the certification process or may not know where to go to be certified. So it's a way of just touching all of those organizations, partnering with us, and we're also going to promote them as well. We're also going to get the word out on who they are and what they do, because, again, it's all about taking care of the veteran. The certification piece is what we do, but we want to get the word out on the different organizations so that veterans can network and unite all across the country and take advantage of all of the different benefits and opportunities that they have.
Well, you mentioned all across the country, Kathy, and one of the things I guess I'd like you to talk about is the reach, the geographic reach of NVBDC and its Military and Veteran Organization Task Force.
Oh, the reach is national. I mean, any business and any part of the country and any city, any small town, if you are a company, if you're a veteran-owned company and you're looking to do business with corporate America or even the government, in the supply chain, then you need to be certified. So the reach is national. We are, partnering with corporations or not corporations, but with organizations that, are in California and in New York and headquartered in D.C. that have chapters all around the country. Because, again, anywhere and everywhere, you're going to find business owners and you're going to find the need to want to contract with, small businesses and things like that. So it's the need is everywhere and we reach everywhere. That helps.
Well, it does, because I think certainly on this type of Veterans Radio America podcast where we're talking to people all over the country, don't be sitting in New Mexico or Texas or Wyoming and Kansas, Florida, and think, God, I wish it was, somewhere near me that I could get involved in this, because you're really telling them that they can get involved and their organization can get involved wherever they are, right?
Absolutely.
Could you explain to folks, Kathy, as the director of the Military and Veteran Organization Task Force for NVBDC, how they might get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me through my phone number, 703-282-6862, or through my email, which is kpoynton@nvbdc.org, or if they just go on the website and they can contact me through the website. You'll find our task force. We have a tab on the website. and they can drop down. There's information there, and there's a form you can fill out. So there's multiple ways of getting a hold of me, and I would love for anyone to reach out to me. Any questions you have, I'll be happy to answer them and walk you through the process, and I'd be thrilled to talk with anyone about this.
We're happy on Veterans Radio to bring a spotlight to NVBDC.org every month, and in particular this new program that I think is going to really explode, the Military and Veteran Organization Task Force. Lieutenant Colonel Catherine Poynton, thank you for being in the spotlight for NVBDC today.
Oh, you're so welcome, and I was thrilled to be here.
What There I Was is all about is telling stories. And we give you themes, and you come up and you give us 5-10 minutes about whatever your story happens to be. Tonight's program is a basic training, and so we've got a really good turnout tonight, so I'm really excited about that. And so first on our list is John Kinzinger. John Kinzinger was in the service from 1966-68 in the Army, and he retired as an E-5. So, John?
Basic training. We got on the train in Detroit and went down to Fort Knox, Kentucky. 19-and-a-half-year-old guy that just left. Nice job at Ford Motor Company, making more money than my father. Had a nice 1965 Chevy Impala that I raced at the dragway. And tried to do my best chasing women, too. But Uncle Sam decided to stop all that. There I am, coming into A-10-5, Fort Knox, Kentucky. That was our basic training company. Throw your bags over there on the bunk. Head on over to mess hall. So I throw my crap on the bunk, and I started going to the mess hall, and it's right next door. I'm walking around there. I learned the hard way that you're supposed to run anytime you're outside. Harry, I'm doing push-ups. And this E-4 is, you know, grilling me like he's a general. Okay, now do you know why you're doing push-ups? I said, no. Well, give me 10 more. So we did this for a while. And finally he broke down, because I was breaking down too. And he said, get out of here. Just don't let me catch you run or walking again. Then we had our basic training Sergeant Kirk. This guy was amazing. He was a total drunk. He was an E-6. But somehow he could leave the barracks after we were done for the day. We're polishing our boots and all that stuff, and we're getting ready to conk out. He leaves. You know, you're on fire watch one night, and he comes staggering in. I'll be damned if that guy couldn't get up in the morning and run us like, you know, nothing ever happened. He had been overseas, and I'll never forget Sergeant Kirk. I did have the luxury of going when I was drafted. There were 8 of us from a high school class. We all went down together. So we were in the old World War I buildings, and most of us were in my bay. And my best friend today, he was in the building next door, but diversity. You know, we didn't use those words back then, but I'd never seen or really talked to somebody from Tennessee or Kentucky. As a matter of fact, our high school class was mostly white. I'm now finding out that there's other people out there. And basic training was my first injection of that. Now, you couldn't be very modest being in basic, because there's no such thing as stalls or anything in the latrine. You know, it's 5 commodes in a row or whatever, and they could certainly come up with unusual ways to punish you for cleaning latrines. It was quite a learning experience. I was definitely ready to get out of basic training. I passed my PT test, and I shot well on the rifle range, and I didn't know where I was going after that, but all of us were in the same boat, so it sort of made the journey together much easier. Sweat, well, it was near the end of the cycle that got warm. February in Fort Knox isn't that warm. And wouldn't you know it, there's spinal meningitis. There's a case of it on the post. So everyone had to leave their windows open at night. And in order to keep the snow off my head, I took my dust cover and I put it over the end of the bunk just so that the snow wouldn't come in. They broke me down very well, you know, from what I had been doing. And, of course, you got the haircut and all the rest of that. But basic training was a real experience. And I was glad to move on to my AIT.
Thanks, John. Isn't it amazing the stories that we learn from all these different adventures that we're going to be talking about tonight and things that are going to trigger hopefully some decent memories for you. All right, next up, we've got Brian Grab. Oh, my goodness. 1968 to 71, he was in the Army as well. Good friend of Veterans Radio and a good friend of There I Was.
Basic was anything but basic. To put it mildly, I was built like a house when I went in. I was 19 years old. I played tennis, and I thought I was in pretty darn good shape. They thought differently. But I learned a lot in basic training. I knew I didn't have two left feet. They straightened that out in a hurry. I learned other uses for a toothbrush in the latrine. Knew how to make a bed so darn tight you could bounce a quarter off of it. And the drill sergeant, I found out he was a close talker. He left quite an impression upon me. Actually, he left a crease in my forehead from that Smokey the Bear hat. Took me 3 weeks to get rid of that. And he was pretty tough. He was a drunk, too, John. I mean, I don't know if there was a prerequisite to be a DI. I don't know. Two incidences I remember fondly about basic training. You know, we all try to make it the best of it. And I wanted to be in Bravo Company. I was Charging Charlie, C-84. And I wanted to be in Bravo because these guys were twirling weapons out there. I said, man, that's cool. And we couldn't transfer, so we stayed with Charlie. And one day, though, we did march out to this large field, and the instructor says, we're going to fix bayonets today. Oh, that's cool. We all fixed bayonets until some jerk bent over to tie his shoe and stabbed himself in the eye. He says, okay, you girls, I'll put them away now. That was that. The other thing I remember, too, when I first got to basic training, much like you, John, I threw my bunk, you know, I found my bunk, and I had my duffel bag over my shoulder going up to the second floor of this hooch or barracks or whatever, and some guy ran down the stairs and about knocked me over, and I turned around and looked at his name tag, Bastuba. Terry Bastuba. I went to grade school with Terry Bastuba, and I saw two other guys I went to grade school with. You can imagine the good times we had. And Terry Bastuba and I, we were on some bivouac up into the mountains of Kentucky one night, and we had this little two-man pinch pup tent, you know, the triangle pup tent, and you got to dig a circle around it and, you know, get inspected for that to make sure, you know, got proper drainage and everything. And I remember I had this little small radio. And I got CKLOW. Man, I was excited. That's home, you know. So we had a fun time singing songs like that. And he and I kind of got into this tent and snuggled in there. And you don't usually do that with another guy, but we did. And in the morning, we woke up and everybody left. It was about 6 inches of snow and our tent collapsed. So I got my experience at KP, which I really didn't mind because we found out the head chef in the Army in the mess hall came from a very famous restaurant in Detroit, Sinbad's. He was the head chef at Sinbad's. So we try to get on KP every time we can because he'd make us pizzas or anything we want any night. So like I said, we made the best of it. They did teach you a lot. They taught me integrity. They carried on my father's training as a child with respect. And I always said that the Army doesn't make a man out of you. It just shows you what it takes to be a man. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Christine Cook. And Christine is a colonel
in the United States Army Reserve. She just retired. She was in the service. I can't do that. It gives you your age. Pretty close. But anyway, she was in the service for 30 years. Made colonel. They made a mistake. They didn't make her a general. But we have her here tonight. So, Colonel Christine Cook, welcome.
It does kind of go in a slightly different direction because as an ROTC scholarship candidate, I did not go to basic training, I have to admit. What they used instead was that they would set up so they would give us every week we got to go to training, and over the course of 4 years, this basically qualified as our basic training. We would do something that was close to basic training, which was our advanced course for 6 weeks in the summer between our junior and senior year. Unfortunately, 2 weeks before my advanced course, I came down with mononucleosis. So I missed my first one, which meant that I had to go recycle to the next one in the year after I graduated from college. So basically, all I had between college and commission as a second lieutenant was this 6 week advanced course. Needless to say, I didn't want to recycle again. So I learned two major things while I was in this 6 week camp. It was at Fort Bragg, or Fort Drag, in Vietnam. And so I got down there. It was hot as Hades. I found out later that Iraq is hotter. But I got there, and I learned two things. One, I learned how to eat really fast. We will talk about why in a moment. I also learned how to come up with a very stiff upper lip, which stood me in good stead later in my career. So the first thing was I learned to eat really fast. And that was because we had five companies that shared the same mess hall. And if you were the first one, you would sit down with your food, and immediately they would say, get up, the next company has to go through. If you were the last company, they would say the same thing to you because another battalion was coming through after you. So I realized that I really hated choking down the food by going down. 20 seconds later, they're telling me to get back up again. It was not my idea of a good time. So instead, what I decided was I was going to go through there. And remember, it was 120 degrees there. So I would go in. I would get myself a biscuit. I would slather that biscuit with peanut butter and jelly. I would go over to the drink station. I would pound down two unsweetened iced teas, two waters, and I would walk right out the door. And then I would eat in peace and quiet while everybody else in there was basically getting upset because they were being told to finish up and eat. Of course, they would yell at me because, you shouldn't be out here eating that. And I said, why not? I'd be out here anyway because you guys tell me I have to get out of here. All right. So that was the one thing I learned. The other thing I learned had to do with stiff upper lip. So we were on a rotation. There was something called Recondo Day. And Recondo Day was where you had to do the slide for life and you had to walk out over this rope and hang and ask for permission to drop into a 40-foot ravine and do a catwalk across another 40-foot ravine. And it ended up, before we went on to a live fire exercise, we had to go through a confidence course. Okay, I'm sorry, an obstacle course, but by this time they were calling them confidence courses, because you would get confidence because you were going to get through and then you would feel good about yourself. Right. So I had made it through Recondo Day. It was no joke, 120 degrees and perhaps a slight exaggeration, 200% humidity. The slide for life felt wonderful because you ended up in the water. I didn't enjoy the 40-foot ravine drop, but there was water at the end. That was good. All right. So I'm in the confidence course. And I got through, you know, you go through and then you come back and you have to do the same things all over again. And my buddy was trying to help me out. He was like 6'5", 215 pounds. And, you know, so he was half the time he was just pulling me over the obstacles. And in one, it probably he shouldn't have done so. Because what ended up happening was it was a log roll. Everybody remember the log roll by any chance? Okay, so you kind of have to go over the log roll was higher than me, but you know I'm supposed to get over it and then roll over and then come back out the other side. Well, he decided to help me by rolling the log a little bit faster than I expected. I fell off of it onto a sharp straight elbow. That hurt. That hurt more than I can imagine it hurting. Yes. So for the rest of the day, I was like this. This was week 5 of a 6-week program. I was pretty sure I'd broken my elbow. So then we went on a field training exercise for 72 straight hours, no rest. I was babying this arm, hoping nobody would notice. But my buddy noticed. He said, "You got to go in and get that checked." So after the field training exercise, I took him up on that offer. I went over. 3 days to graduation, people. 3 days to second lieutenant. The guy looks at me, realizes that I basically wake up in the morning like this, and I have to push it down. He goes, it could be broken. We better do some x-rays, and then we'll recycle you. So he went away. I thought about it, and I didn't have to think about it hard. And it had been stuck like this, so I just got it down. And I said, you know, it's working. I think I'll just work it out. Don't worry about it. I'll see you later. I did not let them look at it with an x-ray machine. And for 6 weeks after that, I kept waking up in the morning and pulling it back down again. But I got myself through, and I saluted my sergeant major when I went across that stage. Thank you.
Okay, we're moving right along here, and it looks like we're going to possibly have a Marine that wants to talk to us. So anyway, right now we've got a genuine jarhead Marine-type person coming up. And that is Scott Brooks Miller. And Scott also is one of our founders, I guess you could say, of There I Was. Okay. All right, Scott, come on up.
Boot camp began 20 days after I turned 17. I was on a flight from Chicago to San Diego, where these really nice guys came on board the airplane and helped us get our stuff. And we got on a bus and we drove into the MCRD, Marine Corps Recruit Depot. And as we drove under the gate, somebody yelled, "I think it's a permanent recording, you'll be sorry." The bus stopped, and then this new person got on, and this guy must have been using amphetamines and a lot of coffee because he was talking a mile a minute, and he was using profanity. I'd gone to Catholic school. You know, we had to get off the bus or, you know, life would end for us. So we get off the bus, and they have conveniently painted yellow footprints on the pavement, and we were told to stand on those yellow footprints and put our feet in that same 45 degree angle. So there's now about 65 of us standing on these yellow footprints, and this man is walking between us and asking us really silly questions like, "Why is your hair long? You know, didn't you shave today? You don't shave, do you?" And in within moments, they were taking us 3 or 4 at a time into this building, and they were giving us these really, really neat haircuts, you know. And I sat in the I sit in the chair, and the guy's, "How do you want it?" And I says, "Oh, just like everybody else's." So our heads are shaved. Then we go into another room, and they get us all naked. And whoever said that military is not a place for shy people was right on about that. So we're now putting all of our clothes, our civilian stuff, into these boxes and closing them up and labeling and putting our home addresses on them. And then we get in a little line, and they're giving us new, brand new military underwear, which also you can use as a sail on a small sailboat. They are giving us green trousers, white socks, white tennis shoes, and yellow sweatshirts. And that's how we're going to dress for the next 2 to 3 weeks. And they began a process of incredible humiliation. When they talk about building a body, mind, and spirit, it's because they destroyed whatever was there before. We're right outside of Lindbergh Field in San Diego. And we're living in Quonset huts, and each each squad is in a Quonset hut. I think that's right. Well, 13 people in a squad, yeah, 13 of us in a Quonset hut. And there's about, by now, there's about 80 of us in our platoon. They just have us doing silly things like picking up cigarette butts and raking sand and painting rocks, and, you know, really fulfillment type exercises. And we do that for a day or two, and we finally had the whole platoon together. Well, that first night that our whole platoon together, this guy tried to kill himself. So the drill instructor wakes us all up, and this guy is laying there bleeding. And he says, if you're going to kill yourself, you run the knife or the razor blade diagonally across your wrist. You do not go straight across your wrist because you won't bleed out, and it just ends up being a lot of paperwork for me. You know, 17, and I'm thinking, what in the fuck is going on? You know, I think I've made a mistake, and I really wanted to say, can I go home? Anyway, that night passes. We never see him again. They take him away. We never see him again. Nobody ever contemplates suicide again. So we begin our training, you know, and we're in our yellow sweatshirts. We do have our little, what the Marine Corps calls covers. You know, I think they give you a size too large until they give you your permanent uniforms, so that you look like a fool with your pants and your tennis shoes and your white socks and your yellow sweatshirt. And they're trying to teach you how to march. And I remember while they're trying to teach us how to march, I was having some difficulty. And Staff Sergeant Acosta comes up to me, takes his hand, puts it there, puts it behind my windpipe, puts his fingers together, and it says, I think you have a problem. Yes, sir. I talked horse for 2 weeks after that, but I never, ever marched out a step again. So one of the best parts of the day was in the late afternoon, and we're taking classes and we're doing physical training and you know, just doing basic training stuff, is when they have mail call. Mail call is... So, and as if on cue, my last name is hyphenated. It's on my birth certificate. It's, you know, not because I'm married or anything. I grew up with the hyphenated last name. My first name is Christopher. In the first grade, I dropped Christopher, went to Scott, you know. So mail is being sent to me to Scott Brooks Miller. And the drill instructor's up there at, you know, he's got us each lined up. You know, there's like 40 of us on each side of this little street, they called it. It was worse than an alley. And he's got the mail up there, and he's going, Private Miller, Private Miller, Private Miller, Private 2494582. And so, yeah, that's me. And I run up there, and you're supposed to, he holds out the letter, and you're supposed to clap your hands like that and take it away. So he's holding the letter there. I clap my hands. He pulls the letter back and says, sir, the private, don't argue with me. Don't you know your fucking name? So I just, you don't argue, you just go through with Private Miller. Fortunately, I was the only Miller there. Boot camp was 11 weeks long, and after 3 weeks, we got rid of the yellow sweatshirts. They gave us the green utility jackets. We had to keep the top button buttoned, you know. Oh, and the mess hall, we, you know, for the first month, we were only allowed to use a spoon to eat. No knives, no forks. Which is really great, and they give you a piece of meat. And scrambled eggs on the spoon, you know, whatever works. So after a couple weeks, oh, then we go to the rifle range. Now, when we go to the rifle range, they finally let us blouse our boots, and they let us unbutton the top button. And by then, we've gotten our you know, we've been issued uniforms, and they're at the tailors, you know, getting perfected for us. And, so we're at the rifle range, and the rifle range is fun. You know, here I am, 17 years old. I'm a left-handed shooter on top of everything else. I can't tell you how many times I got kicked because of that. I did fire sharpshooter, so, you know, everybody was really worried about if you minimum mark, it was marksman sharpshooter expert, and if you didn't qualify, you got recycled. If you failed any of the physical activities, you got recycled. Insubordination, you got recycled. Actually, they had a physical custody platoon, physical conditioning platoon, and a disciplinary platoon. If you argued, you got recycled, you know, and it was, so the biggest fear in life was being recycled. Made it through Hudson Range, you know, we're down to the last couple weeks of boot camp, you know, and we're all getting excited, and they caught two guys, they got recycled. So we're all kind of nervous wrecks, and we finally graduate. What I learned in boot camp was really to be quiet, bring no attention upon myself, which I primarily learned from after learning how to march. So we finished boot camp, you know, that wonderful 11 week experience, you know, we're in our class A's and by the way, I went to San Diego. We don't have winter. There's a reason they call us Hollywood Marines. You know, after we graduate from boot camp, you know, the big ceremony, the band there and everything, march in their formation, congratulations, Marines, all that. The first thing we all do is go to the PX and buy sunglasses. Got to look the part. So that was boot camp.
Yeah, but you still only had the 20 seconds to eat. That was after you couldn't even get into the mess hall unless you'd already memorized your number, whatever that thing was. Well, that was too, but that was really difficult with the soups. And who had meat? That's what I was questioning. Somebody said, oh, meat in the mess hall. What? You had stuff that was still moving. And so, anyway, good job. I hope you guys are having fun, all of you out there. I think it's terrific that you're willing to share these stories with us. And we're going to keep moving on here. And my next list is Tim Driscoll. And Tim is was in the Army, Specialist 4, it says here. And Tim is also has a connection with New Jersey, so he's my best friend.
It'll be quicker if I use my notes. I come home from work one day, and we've all been looking to see in the newspaper, you know, the numbers, if we were going to get drafted. Oh, yeah, I'm going to get drafted any moment. And I said, oh, look at this. I get home that lunch, and there's that big envelope in my mom's mailbox, and I'm saying, oh, yeah, that's me. That's the one I've been looking for. And I then talked, my mom let me go stay at my girlfriend's house with her mom for about 2-3 weeks before I had to go. And so I was gone with the wind and on the bus and off to Fort Dix. And you're talking before about being in shape. Well, I lived at the Jersey Shore, Asbury Park, and we had beautiful beaches. And every morning I'd be out there, except in the wintertime, running on the beach. And I was a junior lifeguard, could swim like crazy. And believe me, I was having a wonderful time and a wonderful life, you know. But we're all going to go to Nam. Why are we going to go to Nam? Well, the sergeant explained to me that we all had to learn how to kill a commie for mommy. And pretty soon we got to thinking about that, and maybe he's right. You know, maybe that's where we're going, and we're going to have to do those things. And something came into my mind that, you know what, I think I really better learn a hell of a lot about taking care of my buds and them get them to take care of me. And, you know, we better learn all about the medicine. It wasn't about firing the rifles, and it wasn't going to be about this, and it wasn't going to be about that. I want to be able to take care of each other. And I didn't want to be a medic, but I sure as hell want to take care of us, because it's us. It's us against the world. And that's what our sergeant really had put forth all the time. He had us, that you guys are it. And wherever you go, whether it's Nam or not, you guys are each other. You are going to be that so-called band of brothers, and you better figure it out real soon. And yeah, we had a jerk that got off the bus, and he went into the building, and he went upstairs, and he came downstairs, and he went out the back door. And we never saw him again, and nobody cared. We had another fella. He was from South America. That was pretty interesting. He wasn't even a member of our country. But because he had signed up, you know, to be in the military, to get his green card and what have you, they drafted him. That was an eye-opener. Then we finally get, after the haircuts and everything, I get to spend a night, the first night out there in the building, and it's bunk beds. And I got up top, and the morning I wake up, and guy down below says, "Hey, Driscoll, here." And he's going to give me his wallet. I said, "No, I don't want your wallet, man. You're going to need some of that eventually." He said, "No, that's your wallet." It had fallen out in the middle of the night, and him being a good soul, gave it back to me. I thought that was pretty cool. We knew he was going to be my best friend from then on, you know. So it's good to have a best friend like that. Then we got to go to our real billets, and they were all old. I'm going to get some of these words out right. They're going to be wooden barracks from World War II, and they have only studs and the outer clatter boards that are on there. There's no insulation. There's no nothing. But guess what? Ours has another benefit. It has no floors. Sergeant, we got a little problem inside our billets. It has no floors. They're all shot. I mean, really bad holes all over the place. "Oh, I don't want to hear that crap. Let me see what you're talking about." And he was, "Oh, my God." He says, "There's no floors in there." You know. So I says, "Well, guess what I did?" I says, "Before I got drafted, Sergeant," and I'm 20 years old, by the way. A lot of these guys are 17, 18, 19, whatever. No, I'm an old guy. I says, "I put floors in." I said, "If you can get me, you know, 3, 4, 5 guys and get us some tools and nails, and we could put floors in these places." And he said, "I just talked to the other sergeants lunchtime." He says, "We're going to do all 3 buildings." And I said, "Really? That's great." He says, "Yeah, but don't worry about all the other stuff. We're going to get you to fire the rifle and throw the grenade. But you won't be doing any marching, and you won't be doing any KP, and you won't be doing any of this, and you sure as hell aren't going to get any rest. But they're going to feed us once in a while." Well, we did all the buildings, and it took us almost the whole time we were there, that whole 90 days. It really was terrific. I really liked it. It was great. And then they said, "Well, by the way, we liked it so much, now we want you to dye the floors." "Why would you dye the floors?" "Well, they decided they want them red." Can you imagine that mess? Because it didn't want to dry right away because it's New Jersey and what have you, and it's humid all the time. Pretty soon, it's time to go home, and it's almost over with. And one night, we're all there, and right alongside of us was McGuire Air Force Base, and you could hear the big jets taking off, and the whole building would rattle and carry on. It was great. Once in a while, you would get fire detail. Oh, that was special. You had to stay up and go through the building for about 3 hours and make sure that nobody was trying to burn us down, especially with our new floors. So we turn around, and it's my turn. I'm up there, and there's guys talking in their sleep. There's guys walking in their sleep. I can't even begin to tell you the other things they were doing in their sleep. I wasn't having any of it, you know? And then, of course, when you come downstairs, these idiots, they're walking around. They can't find the bathrooms. They're crashing into the butt cans. Anybody remember butt cans? Yeah. It was a quart can of God knows what filled with water. And don't you put a cigarette in that thing because the sergeant's going to have you drink it, you know. So anyhow, we had to make sure that didn't happen. And I got to go home. And just before I got to come home, they had this huge blackout in New York City. You remember that? And there were no lights and no traffic lights and nothing else worked in the whole town. And pretty much the people over there were behaving themselves. They weren't killing everybody. They weren't destroying all the buildings. But it was very interesting that New York City was black. I got to go home just about 2 weeks before Christmas. I got to go to a bunch of parties that my friends all decided to throw because they figured they're never going to see me again because we're going to die. You know, we're all going to go to Vietnam. And if we don't kill those commies for mommy, we're goners. We're just not going to happen. And all the girls are giving you a big kiss because they're never going to see you again, you know. And, of course, my car is gone, my beautiful 57 Ford, you know, and it's all fixed up and makes too much noise. And I love it to pieces. But I also have a 40 Ford. And that is pure race car. I belong to a whole bunch of guys, and we race stock cars every Saturday night in Belmar, New Jersey. And we have a hell of a great time. And it's all the kind of thing that our dad and our uncles have done forever and ever. So every gas station, every garage, everywhere, we've got stock cars. That means you're in there all the time working on your cars and drinking. and drinking. Wait a minute, drinking? I can't drink until I'm 21. I'm in New Jersey. No, no, no. You find places that'll sell you cases of beer. You go see down to the bars guys who will buy you containers of beer and meet you at the back of the door. You know? On and on and on. You know, kids are just great. I knew we were going to be great soldiers by the time we get back, especially with all this new information I have. And then eventually they went and we all graduated, and that was good. And, you know, promised to see each other forever, never saw anybody again. Christmas is over. It's time to go back. Where am I going to? Where am I going to? Some place called Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, or as they call it, Fort Lost in the Woods. And it's an engineer place, and they're going to teach you all about this, that, and everything. And I'm going to be a truck driver. And I said, okay, truck driver's cool. I'm going to run over the commies. That's a great idea. I like that. Can I have a couple of 50 caliber machine guns, please, Al? May I have some rounds to go with it? Because I got an idea. We're going to run over the little suckers. You know? So later on, I get to meet you wonderful folks, and I get to meet Al, who was a gun trucker over there. Boy, he's absolutely my dear of Santa Claus. A real honest-to-God gun trucker guy who doesn't take any crap and going to run this way and take all his guys, and God forbid if we can just bring them back along with us. And that's my story. Bless you all. Thank you.
All right, yeah, you don't want to get recycled or what they had at Fort Polk, they had the Motivation Platoon. Remember those? Once somebody went that way, you never saw them ever again. I don't know where they went, but they never bothered us ever again either. So that was fine. Thank you very much, Tim. Yeah, running on the Jersey Shore and all that stuff, you can only imagine that was a time when you really were in good shape. It was good. It's good to grow up there. You know, it's good to be here, too. I know. He was the guy that did that. I mean, I was a platoon leader, so I had my own room. I thought that was kind of cool. Yes, he's demonstrating how to the pugil stick type of thing where you whack somebody in the face with a rifle butt. All right, how we doing? All right, we're moving right along here. We've got a couple more stories here, and I'm really excited to hear this. The next one up is Bob Kurtz, and Bob was in the Air Force and was an E6. So we're moving up in ranks, so although we have been through a colonel, and I don't think we're ever going to equal that. I don't think most of us ever have that goal in mind. You can stay in the service, and you can be a colonel. You just have to be there for 30 years and do all the other stuff that goes on.
All right. Well, my experience in the Air Force was of choosing. I chose to be in the Air Force. I had heard so many bad rumors about all the other services that I felt that choosing was the way to go. Actually, when I got in the basic training, 2 weeks after I was there, I got my draft notice for the Army. So I was a little worried because wasn't sure exactly how I could meet their demands being in the Air Force. But that's how close I came to being drafted versus choosing what I wanted to do. My father, unfortunately, was very much against the Army. I guess it kind of destroyed his life during his younger years, as does the draft with all of us. Heck, they were pulling people right out of college to go into the Army. They didn't care whether or not you spent $10,000, $15,000. You did not get that back. Fortunately for me, I was at Michigan State when they gave out lotto numbers. So nice to win the lotto, but not the military lotto. Those were some bad times. I prepared myself to go into the Air Force. I was 180 pounds. I could lift 100 pounds over my head and throw it. So doing push-ups and that kind of stuff was almost silly to me. I had a harder time in Boy Scout jamborees than I did in the Air Force basic training. Everything I learned in the Boy Scouts was just was a little bit better, you know, more realistic in the military. I learned how to communicate with other Boy Scout members. I learned how to communicate with other people from God knows what parts of the country. But really, in the Air Force, I learned all you have to do is know three words. Sir, yes, sir. Once you learn those three words, the military becomes very easy. Of course, there was a lot of guys that couldn't understand those three words. I learned real quick. But the rest of the basic training was really a joke. Yeah, we had an obstacle course, and I think they might have called it the confidence course. But it was, yeah, we went over and under a couple of logs, and yeah, we had this rope crossing. The guy in front of me, he was a short guy. He fooled around with the rope. I guess we lost our signal. Okay. Anyway, he fooled around with the rope, and I says, hey, don't jiggle the rope. Well, anyway, he didn't listen to me. So I just extended my arms to the sky, and his feet came off that rope. Yeah, he went in the water. The water was not a place where you wanted to be because everybody that went in the water caught pneumonia. Never saw that person again. Our troop that we had started out with 50 people. We ended up with 20. 20 guys in our platoon or thing, whatever we did. And we never learned to march. I've never seen some of the worst marching people, even through my whole 20-year career. The Air Force can't march. It's a disgrace almost. Oh, boy. I tell you, even in basic training, I think we half-stepped march more than we forward-stepped. Unbelievable. I can see, though, that time is getting short, and I hope that if any of you decide to go in the service, it's the Air Force. We have good food, too.
I want to thank you for listening to Veterans Radio today. This is Dale Thronberry, and until next week, you are dismissed.